Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Welcome back to the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast. I'm Joe Noga, joined by Paul Hoynes. Hoynesy, the Guardians took care of the Red Sox on Marathon Monday, Patriots Day in Boston. The Guardians shut them out 6-0 thanks to a Will Brennan pinch hit home run that he wrapped around the pesky pole. Real interesting to see the reaction from the dugout and just see the energy that this club has generated. Right now, these guys are flying high.
Yeah, no doubt about it, Joe. They're 11-5. You know, I think really coming, you know, going last weekend, coming out of there without getting swept by the Yankees, that big win on Sunday, I think that really energized them going into Fenway. And they really played a great game yesterday. They pitched well. The bullpen pitched well, and they came through late with the offense.
Yeah, and you can't say enough about the effort that Xavion Curry, fresh off the injured list, coming out and making his first start of the season. He goes 5 innings, allows 2 runs and a walk. Doesn't get the win, but that effort was about as good as you can ask of anybody. And Xavion Curry just endearing himself even more to that clubhouse with the effort that he gave.
Yeah, this is a guy that opened the year on the IL because of that viral infection that kind of tore through the clubhouse in spring training. He makes 2 rehab starts at Columbus. I don't think he throws more than 60 pitches in either of those games. And he goes out yesterday, 5 2/3 scoreless, 6 strikeouts. And, then the bullpen comes in and completes a 3-hit shutout, Joe.
Yeah, Curry's slider was what everybody was talking about yesterday. It was sharp. He was throwing it for strikes. He was throwing it ball to strike, and he was throwing it strike to ball, which it's tough to do, tough to command. But he was sharp. Vogt talked about that after the game and said, that's really it makes the other pitches play up. His fastball command was great. He threw about 30 of those sliders and got 29% swing and miss. So, just credit to Xavion Curry coming out, being ready. And what does a Xavion Curry like that, what does he contribute or add to the rotation? And can he get them, some depth and some length?
Yeah, well, he better, Joe, because he's filling in right now. He's filling in for Shane Bieber. And Bieber's not coming back this year. They need a starter. And, Curry really put his best foot forward yesterday. So we'll see how this works. And, we'll see, another, I guess, candidate for that job is Ben Lively, and he's starting Wednesday.
Yeah, audition for Ben Lively tomorrow night. We'll talk about that here in a little bit. But let's go back to the Yankee series, because we've got to talk about the rotation. We've got to talk about Carlos Carrasco and Tristan McKenzie. They started on Saturday in the doubleheader against the Yankees. Both look kind of rough. It's the walks. It's the command. It's the not being able to go out there and finish off innings in terms of preventing batters from getting on base via the walk, via the multiple hits there. What are you seeing out of Carrasco? What are you seeing out of McKenzie? And, how much longer do you go with these guys? I know you don't have a lot of options, but like we said, Ben Lively's out there. Does he take the spot of one of these guys in the rotation moving forward?
Carrasco and McKenzie combined for 11 walks in 8 2/3 innings in the doubleheader, Joe, on
Oof.
both ends of the doubleheader. And you just can't pitch that way. You can't have your starters pitch that way, or you're going to kill the bullpen. And that's what happened in the doubleheader when they got swept. I like Carrasco's stuff better than McKenzie's right now. McKenzie's throwing 90 to 91 miles an hour. I don't know if he's fully recovered from the elbow injury last year, Joe. So that's a big question mark to me. And when you have your fourth and fifth starters, pitch like they did against the Yankees in that doubleheader, you've got concerns if you're the Guardians front office about just where this rotation is going. And so that's why it was so important for Curry to have the game he did Monday, but still, there's question marks about this rotation. This is a rotation that is really kind of on, it's not on as strong. It doesn't have the foundation it once had.
Right. And the problem here is in the past, there had always been, one, two, three guys waiting at either AAA or AA, ready to sort of make that jump and come up and contribute. And right now you're looking with Joey Cantillo hurt. There really isn't, or there really aren't those names at the next level ready to come in and contribute if they do need to make a move or make a change there in the rotation. You can go a couple more weeks like this, but I don't know if this is a long-term solution with these guys pitching the way they have, unless they're able to turn it around. But yeah, there isn't that sort of depth, that foundation to fall back on if you do need to make a hard decision or need to put somebody on the injured list or move in a different direction.
Yeah, and the reason is because all their prospects are in the rotation right now. I think that all they can do is kind of cross their fingers and wait for Gavin Williams. And it doesn't, and we've seen already that they're going to take their time with Williams. They're not going to rush him, or he would have been back here by now, I would imagine. This was an elbow tweak on March 9th. He missed a spring training start, and we haven't seen him since. So, obviously something's going on there. They have to build him back up. But until they do, they're kind of just, they're holding on to the tail end of the caboose right now.
Yeah, the good news from Chris Antonetti yesterday before the game, he said that Gavin Williams was pitching 2 innings in a simulated game. So he is on the road to sort of starting to stretch out and starting to build up. But again, it'll be maybe at least another month before you see him, because he's got to get into enough rehab games to not only just get built up, but get a feel for things. And you want him pitching, confidently when he comes back up here. Not just, hey, he can get us 80 pitches or whatever. So Gavin Williams a little ways away. But back to that Yankee series, it started off rough, rain out, doubleheader sweep. And then Sunday, the offense keeps chipping. The offense, even when they fall down, behind by a few runs, Aaron Judge hits a monster 3-run home run. It's 4-2, and they keep chipping, they keep coming back. Logan Allen keeps them in the game, does a decent job of pitching, giving them a little length there. But then Estevan Florio comes off the bench and gives them a lead with a pinch hit home run, and then they go to extra innings and they fall behind again. You think Emmanuel Clase, automatic lights out. This game is saved, and Anthony Volpe steps in and sort of touches him, gives him the hangs a blown save on him for the first time this year. What'd you think when you saw Volpe hit that ball past Brennan in the outfield?
I don't know, Joe. I was like dead set. I was in dead red panic right there, because I had written, you had this great story about Florial coming back, hitting a pinch hit home run against his old team, you know, circling the bases, jumping for joy. And you've got, you think, okay, we've got, they've got Class A going in the ninth. This thing is over. And like you said, Volpe, you know, doubles past Brennan. I don't know, you know, I think Brennan took some heat for maybe taking a bad route, but, you know, Volpe smoked that ball. I don't even know if he takes a better route if he catches it. You know, you know, the damage is done. And then, you know, you went, then they go to the 10th. And, you know, the Yankees, you know, take a 2-0, you know, a 7-5 lead on a Rizzo single pass first. And you're thinking, okay, this is a sweep. They're done. And but they come back in the bottom of the 10th inning. And that was one of the craziest innings I've seen in a long time, Joe.
Well, before they got to the bottom of the 10th, it was that double play that really sort of said, and Stephen Vogt is right. You know, and not enough people are going to talk about it, but people, it should be the number one play on SportsCenter. This was the 3-2-3 double play turned by a couple of catchers and David Fry at first base and Bo Naylor at the plate. Fry gets the hard ground ball from Alex Verdugo. Verdugo, I think, might have thought that Fry caught the ball on the fly because he didn't really necessarily run hard out of the box. And that allowed Naylor to get the sweep tag on the runner coming home and then immediately turn and throw back to first and get the out a step ahead of Verdugo. Does that play get made if there aren't two catchers on either end of that? You know, the awareness that Fry showed immediately going home with that throw, putting it right where it needed to be, and then to get back and have the presence of mind to be on the base for Naylor to throw back to immediately. That's where all of this versatility comes into play, right?
Yeah, that was crazy because both those guys in that game, Fry started the game at first base, went switched to catcher, then switched back to first base. So he's played two different positions, and Bo Naylor doesn't come into the game until late as a pinch hitter. So those are two guys that, you know, have been bouncing around because of their versatility. And they still pulled off that play. It was, you know, just a great, you know, I think, you know, Fry was talking about it and said, you know, he you know, his main concern was getting the out at the plate. So he throws home and he wasn't expecting Bo to whirl around and throw it back to him. But as soon as he saw Bo start to pivot at the plate after the tag, he said, I better get back to first base because this thing's coming back to me. And just a great double play. And you're right, it got kind of, you know, swept under the rug because there were so many runs. There were five runs scored in the 10th inning alone by both teams. And it was just, you know, one of those crazy walk-off situations. And you don't even get to talk about the double play. But that really, you know, that saved them. You know, the Yankees scored two runs in the top of the 10th to take a 7-5 lead. But the double play really kind of shut them down. And gave Cleveland a chance to come back and win it.
Yeah, you kind of walk off the field a little shell shocked there after you think you're in business with the bases loaded and a smash to first like that. And then you mentioned at the bottom of the inning the craziness that ensued. David Fry factored into that as well with a ball that I think a lot of us thought was going to be a home run, hitting high off the wall for a double. But it was another case of Jose Ramirez, the Guardians, you know, offense putting pressure on an opposing defense. And, you know, Gleyber Torres makes a bad play. And it all of a sudden, you're in position for Bo Naylor to step up to the plate and, you know, or I'm sorry, Andrés Giménez to step up to the plate and end it with a sacrifice fly.
Yeah, you really saw, you know, you know, Volpe can't turn the double play, can't get the ball out of his glove on Josh Naylor's ground ball. You know, so that gives Cleveland a chance. And then, you know, what was it? Brennan sends the ground ball to second base, and they're playing in, and he still fumbles the ball. And mm-hmm. Josh Naylor scores, and he doesn't slide, Joe. That was the craziest thing I've ever seen. I mean, you know, I don't know. Who doesn't slide on that play? He goes in standing up and barely gets in. So, I you know, he is the craziest base runner I've ever seen. He just does things that nobody else does, but they work.
Well, go all the way back to the 2020 postseason. Josh Naylor is the craziest base runner you've ever seen. We saw multiple examples of it against the Yankees in that series as well in 2020. So, if it's Josh Naylor and the Yankees, you're expecting some sort of something to go crazy there. Just the ability of this team, no matter how many runs they're down, you're down two runs in the 10th inning. You think maybe you've got the automatic runner, he'll score there, but it's only a matter of time before a game like that ends. Once they take a 2-run lead into the bottom of the 10th, these guys don't quit and they don't give up. We've seen that multiple times on that first homestand. We saw it yesterday when it was scoreless heading into the seventh inning, and they're basically getting held down by Cutter Crawford. All around, this team doesn't quit. And I think, in years past, we would have already seen T-shirts printed with that. But they don't need the T-shirt. They all know it.
Yeah, it's a good quality to have. And it, when you do it early in the season, Joe, it just keeps building. You know, that's why it's a key element to any team, any successful team, is the ability to come back, the ability to score late in a game, and to rally for wins. You have to be able to do that if you're going to be a contender, if you're going to, have a chance to reach the postseason.
So yesterday's game, obviously, Will Brennan hits the pinch hit home run. Around Pesky's pole. Not the first time Brennan has had an interaction with the pole here in Fenway. What did you think? This is a kid who grew up a Red Sox fan, and you told the story last year about how he went to a Boston game at Kansas City when he was 10 years old, and had an interaction with Tito. At the time, Will Brennan and the Red Sox, it's obviously a special combo.
Yeah, his stepdad, Brennan's stepdad, was a big Boston fan, kind of indoctrinated him into the Red Sox legacy. So, he knew all. I don't think he'd ever played at Fenway before last year, but he knew all about it. He knew about Pesky's pole. He knew the significance of hitting the home run around the pole. So it was really cool to see him do it again yesterday. This, guys have different ballparks that they love that they play well in, and maybe Fenway is Brennan's place.
Yeah, I should see him in the lineup all week if that's the case. The outfield here, a unique situation. It's a crazy outfield, an 11:00 game. These guys got in last night or Sunday night at 8:00. They really didn't have a much of a chance to do a walk around the outfield, especially with a new starting center fielder in Tyler Freeman to teach him the ropes. But these guys did a pretty decent job defensively. I'd say they did an outstanding job defensively. Boston hitters were hitting 400-foot moonshots all day long, knee bucklers, and these guys hung with them and made the plays. Tyler Freeman, especially in his first, outfield start in Fenway, looked pretty good. The outfield came through again, to support Curry there.
Yeah, I thought they did a better job than the Red Sox did on Arias's triple in the third inning. The Red Sox outfielders botched that. They got too close to the wall. The center fielder wasn't backed up, so it went for a triple. So I thought JT McGuire did a great job getting those guys ready for Fenway. And I remember, Joe, Kwan's first trip to Fenway, was a learning experience. He was playing in front of the monster. He had a couple balls bounce past him, and then he went back in last year and played it like he played it like he was Karol Yastrzemski. He really he went to school on the wall, and he knew how to play it. The bounces off the wall, so it's a tough ballpark to play in. You got that low fence in right field. Then you've got the monster in left field, and you've, you know, center field is what, 410, 420, you know, so it's a weird shaped outfield with a lot of nooks and crannies, and the Guardians played it well yesterday.
Yeah, watching Tyler Freeman drift back into that Bermuda Triangle yesterday, I thought, oh man, here comes. And he made the play. He made a catch, you know, out there 400 feet from home plate. So you know, a good experience. Now, it could be completely different today. Who knows with a night game? But, you know, yesterday was pretty good. The Guardians moved to 8-2 on the road, tied for the best record in the American League in road games with the Yankees, who are also 8-2. They allowed a season low in hits. Their fewest was three hit shutout, so their fewest you know, hits of the season allowed. They're 8-0 when they score first, and that's a pretty good sign there. And what is the first time they've had back to back pinch hits in franchise? Or I'm sorry, it's fifth time in franchise history that they've had back to back pinch hits in games.
Pinch hit home runs, right?
Pinch hit home runs. I'm sorry. Yeah, pinch hit home runs in games since 2006 when Travis Hafner and Ben Broussard did it. So a lot of positives came out of yesterday's game. You've got Tanner Bibee on the mound going today. You've got Stephen Kwan with a 7-game hit streak. You've got, you know, Jose Ramirez leading the team with 13 RBIs. Gabriel Arias now, 6 for his last 10 at the plate, and just looking, you know, this was what they had hoped to be able to see out of Gabriel Arias, you know, coming out of spring training, and now he might start getting a few more at bats, a few more opportunities.
Yeah, Joe, what a strange game this is. You know, you watch Arias during spring training, you go, ho-hum, you know. Then you watch him, you know, in the first week or 6, 7, 8 games of the regular season, he's hitting 125, 150, and you're thinking, what is it about this guy? You know, we've seen him much, much better than this. And all of a sudden, you know, he gets to play 3 or 4 games in a row. He's hitting doubles. He's hitting home runs. He's, you know, he's hitting triples. And it just goes to show you can't make – you know, April might be the worst time of the year to, you know, make a final decision on a player because, you know, the stats haven't piled up yet. And you can your whole attitude as a player can change in 2 or 3 or 4 games.
Does this mean maybe a few more games at DH for Jose Ramirez if they're going to try and get Arias into the rotation, into the starting lineup a little bit more? Does Esteban Florial earn some more at bats because he's got 2 home runs in his last two games when he's come in? Vogt pushing all the right buttons. When we say that, we also mean, you know, who he's choosing to give playing time to at the right moments. You know, can he let guys get hot enough to sustain something before, you know, sticking the next guy in?
Yeah, you know, I think that's one of the big things that you have to like about Vogt. You know, he hasn't gone with a stocked lineup, you know, the same lineup day in and day out. He's given everyone a chance. He's given people a chance to get hot that, you know, have maybe started slowly. He's got certain people that are always in the lineup, you know, Josh Naylor and Ramirez and Jimenez. But the other 7 or 8 spots in that lineup, I guess 6 spots in the lineup, you know, he's circulating players through there left and right. And, you know, I think especially early in the year coming out of spring training, you want to keep everybody involved.
Yeah, Kwan should you probably throw in there
as
well.
Yeah, I forgot Kwan. Yeah,
yeah, he's in every game too. But yeah, I think he's done a really good job, and so far, you know, just keep going. I can't argue with the results at this point. Can't argue with the results of this podcast, Hoynesy. Another good one. We'll check back in with you tomorrow after the first night game of this series at Fenway. Tanner Bibee going up against. I believe it's Garrett Whitlock, 1-0 with a 1.26 ERA. So we'll see how that goes, and we'll check in with you again tomorrow.
Good deal, Joe.